kuatai te wā mō Scorpio Book Spotlight e aratake ana I ngā puka puka pāpai.
Yes, that's right. It is time for one of our loveliest segments of the week, the Scorpio Books Spotlight, where Scorpio Books spotlights a fantastic book in store. And we have the lovely Renata in the studio. Good morning.
Morning, lovely to be here.
You're very, you're actually Christmas colours today.
I know, gosh, that's not on purpose at all. I'm kind of a little bit horrified by the Christmas happens.
Well,
now,
there's stuff at the supermarket already.
Oh. There's so many people coming into the store and saying, I'm getting my Christmas shopping done early.
Really?
Which, you know, go them, but I'm just like, don't tell me.
I reckon if I was working there, I'd be like, that's great. Please never tell me that, ever. anyway, we have a very interesting looking book today.
Yeah, we do. We sure do. It's going to be serious whiplash, people, because I heard Liam talking about scones just before.
Yeah.
And now we're going to talk about an early 20th century Russian novel.
I was going to say, this is not a recent publication, is it?
No, it is not. I'm going to kind of give some love to the classics section.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. Just this cover is everything.
Yeah, the classics section sells really well, and it's, you know, for a reason.
Yeah, well, that's often the section I will go to.
Is it? Okay, I was going to say, are you a fan of the classics?
Well, I always think, like, oh, if a book's got a reputation, it's got one for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there must be a reason.
But there's something about it that makes them sound stuffy or, you know, even to start with, just going, oh, these classics.
I know, I know.
But anyway, this book, I'm going to talk about The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov. And, you know, it's one of those books that has a kind of cult following. I actually studied it at university in a Russian literature course. And, you know, I expected it to be heavy and sort of political and somber and tragic and all the things I thought
as pretty much every Russian book I've ever read is.
And it's political for sure, but it is also just an absolute mad ride. It's the craziest book.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
I was sort of reading lots of stuff about it and a few kind of little quotes I pulled out. Few books can match it for weirdness.
Oh, yeah. It's, okay, great.
A fever dream.
So it is obscure. Well, I mean, look, for reference, there's a cat on the front cover with
smoking a cigar and holding a deck of cards.
Yeah. I was going to say he's got a particular hand, but I don't know poker, so.
Well, so this book features kind of three main plot lines, and the first plot line is that the devil and his entourage visit Moscow.
Oh, okay.
And the cat is one of the greatest cat characters of all time. Behemoth. Behemoth is the cat's name, and he's gigantic. He loves vodka. He loves guns. He's kind of like, you know, a much, much funnier Vladimir Putin.
Right. So he's just a Russian man, basically, but a cat.
He's a trickster. Excuse me. They kind of all are. It's the beautiful thing about this book. It opens with a quote from Goethe's Faust. I'll just find the bit I'm talking about in my copy. It gets translated differently in different versions.
Oh, right. It's a word,
says,
yeah.
And so who are you, after all? I am part of the power which forever wills evil and forever works good. So they're
powerful.
They're like, they're there to hold a mirror up to this corrupt society, basically.
Right.
So they cause mayhem. The devil and his entourage cause mayhem. They kind of show the populace their greed, their vanity. They just kind of turn everything upside down and force people to take a look at themselves. So they're kind of, it's about prompting transformation rather than being evil.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, and they talk about it a lot in the book, like you can't have good without, it's part of a continuum, and you can't have light without a shadow. And
right, okay, yeah. I mean, it's so true, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a really philosophical underpinning to the book, but it's delivered with so much fun, so much energy.
Right.
So it's kind of a satire on Russian society, but it's also, there's a second plot that runs through the book, a second story of the story of Pontius Pilate condemning Jesus to death.
Oh, that's not where I thought we were going with this.
And eventually you learn that the master of the title is the author of the book about Pontius Pilate. So he's written this book, and it's been sort of suppressed by the authorities, because at the time, right, you know, in a very kind of atheistic society, they didn't really want to acknowledge the idea that Jesus was a real historical person.
Yeah, of course.
So it's a lot of autobiographical elements about the writer's life in it, because of a lot of his work was suppressed. And
this Mikhail
Bulgakov.
Okay.
And this book was not published during his lifetime, you know, which is pretty tragic. And
that gives it some weight, doesn't it?
Yeah. It wasn't published until about like 17 years after he died, I think, or maybe even longer. It was published in France, not in Russia at that time.
Was it still the Soviet Union when it was published?
Good question. It was published in 1967. I don't know
So it would have been.
Yeah, Russian history.
Yeah, right. Oh, so, okay, so the book is still, like, it's a bit older than I thought.
Yeah.
Right, so the Pontius Pilate part.
Yeah.
Is that tied into this other story, or are they like clearly separated this book?
Well, they start to kind of join together, because eventually you realise that the story is the book that was written by the character, the master.
Whoa! Oh my god, my brain hurts.
And he's kind of gone mad, because the authorities have you know, suppressed his book.
He
ends up burning it. He burns the manuscript kind of goes crazy. But there's a very famous line from the book. He's talking to the devil about having burned the book. The devil sort of says, show me the book. Where is it?
Yeah, right.
And he says, I burned it. And the devil says, manuscripts don't burn. And it's kind of, you know, the power of art will always survive and transcend.
Yeah, the idea's not gone with you burning that manuscript.
You could burn the actual pages, but
it lives on.
Yeah, the work, the integrity
is
indestructible. And then the cat sort of produces a copy of it that he's been sitting on. It's like, hang on a second, isn't this it here?
Oh, my God. So it sounds really bizarre.
It does, but it kind of all hangs together despite that. And there's a beautiful love story in it as well. The master and Margarita, who's the his kind of beloved character.
Right, because I was like, is that Margarita?
It's not a cocktail.
But I don't even think that's how you spell it.
No. It's there's a love story in there as well. And so it's kind of got many things. You would kind of assume it would be a hot mess, but he just pulls all of it together. And I kind of love the way that this book is such a great example, a classic, of how you can break all the rules, you know?
Right,
It doesn't have to be one thing.
Well, it certainly sounds like it's not following any conventional kind of story structure.
No, but it's driven by a sort of a deep curiosity on the part of the writer, that there are things that he is sort of desperately really trying to convey about the society that he lived in.
Oh my God.
Saying, you know, wake up people, you know, you all this greed and corruption.
Yeah, right.
You know, you kind of all profess to have such high morals and political standpoints, but really you're all just trying to.
Oh my God. And it was published after his death.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds like a fantastic book. I really
want to
read it.
It's such a great book. It really, really is.
And, like, the books you study, you know, whether it's in English or Russia or university or whatever, they always stick with you, I find.
Yeah, yeah, because you are asked to kind of investigate so many elements of them deeply. And, I mean, you don't need to do that to enjoy this book.
I'm just super wild keen ride to try this, to read this book, actually.
And it's got, like, I really like fairy tales and folk tales, and you know, there's something about this that I think has some of that woven into it, the way that the devil and his entourage are kind of like, you know, trickster characters, classic characters who appear and upend everything so that people get a fresh look at the lives that they're leading.
I'm so, so interested by this book.
Yeah. And so, like, in the classics section, where do you go to the, and what's your favourite?
I'm a huge Arthur Conan Doyle fan.
Okay. We've got some big,
I know,
glossy,
I weighty, know,
sort of bang, yeah, someone over the I head. That's know the murder weapon copy.
And I've, like, nearly, well, no, I can tell you what, my parents have spent a lot of money on Sherlock Holmes books over the years from Scorpio Books. What good else do I like? Anything kind of, yeah, I enjoy kind of Soviet writing.
Yeah.
There's a sort of, like, I know, there's a societal context in that sort of, like, time period that you never have gotten
and
elsewhere.
I think that's the lovely thing about reading those older books is that they do, like, the language, it can be kind of hard to get your head around it sometimes, you know. It takes quite a while to sort of get your ear in, almost, to sort of hearing how the language works on the page, but then it does really, it's kind of alchemical. It sort of shifts something in your brain about, oh, this is a whole different way of interpreting the world and, you know, describing things, a whole different kind of language for life.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, like, your brain, like, adjusts to that, and it's very odd.
Yeah.
Although I remember I started with, when I was at high school, I read Animal Farm.
Yeah.
And that was so much easier to read than I ever anticipated. Like, it's not a complex book to read.
Yeah, exactly.
And they often are never as difficult as you imagine.
I mean, I think people do assume that if they're in that section, they're kind of these incredibly intellectual books. But,
they're,
you know,
not
a lot
often
of them were just the absolute kind of bestseller bangers of their time.
Well, and
you know,
that's why they have got the reputations they've got, because they were accessible. Like, masses of people could read them and get them and all that, you know?
And I was just going to give a little extra plug from the kids' bookshop.
Oh, please.
Because the classic section there sells really well too, because, you know, parents and grandparents come in and they buy books that they remember
from of course
their childhood.
Yeah,
and, you know, yesterday I was unpacking a box of books and I pulled out three copies of Charlotte's Web.
Love.
Just looking at the cover, it's like transporting.
Charlotte's Web always had a legendary cover.
Beautiful illustrations by Garth Williams, who also illustrated all the Little House on the Prairie originals.
Richard Scarry.
Oh yeah.
His drawing style is so just fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to it at the moment.
Yeah. And, like, for kids who really like detail as well, like, there's so much detail in those books, and you can just keep going back and going, oh, wow. And then I remember with one that my grandparents had, realising that Lowly the Worm was on every single page, and somewhere in the page, Lowly the Worm would be there, be like,
that's so funny.
And then you go back and it turns into a kind of hide and seek exercise instead. You're looking for this one little character to appear.
Because I'm always reading one to my nephew at the moment that it's like Cars and Trucks, but it's all like little mouse families and stuff in the Cars and Trucks. And, like, The more you look at an image, the more there's in them. Like, it's insane, like, how much he packs into a
exactly.
picture.
So even with that, you know, a picture of, you know, some mice driving a car, you can feel how deeply interested in it the author is, you know?
Yes.
Like, that's
absolutely.
Such a big part of why you respond to it, because you can see they're, like, really, really into it.
Well, exactly. And I think, passion comes across. It really does.
It
really does.
Whether you're writing about the devil visiting Moscow or mice in a car.
I really want to read this. And I must say, it's not like a massive book either.
No.
Considering
it's not.
Many thousands of storylines seem to be going on, it's not like overwhelmingly scary.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think there's bits that might be confusing. That's the other thing, is just like trying to not let yourself get too freaked out by anything in a book that's
like,
unexpected.
It's kind of okay to be confused.
Oh, God, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, right. That's a really valuable point.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Just see how. And, you know, you might not even like it either. I think people kind of almost approach things like that, like it's work or it's a test or, you know, I have to be able to understand exactly what the themes are in this book. And it's, you know, it's not the point. I don't think it's the point.
No, I know. And well, I think that's why, like, so many people don't like to read at home, because, like, they think of it as a school contest
or something
like that.
It's sort of intimidating because someone's going to come and give you a test.
But you don't. no one's going to test you on this afterwards, so it's
identify
fine.
Identify three symbols of language on page 8.
God. PTSD. Right. Well, Renata, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you in here, and thank you for great book choice today, Master and Margarita.
There's you know, multiple editions in the classics
section. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so you can even kind of choose which one
takes your fancy. Oh, love that. Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Pleasure.